It is now time for our main speaker. Please come see you from Santa Monica.
I shouldn't touch it. It sounds good. All right. I'm Sia. I'm an alcoholic. You guys are nuts. I'm going to fit right in here. Thank you for having me. What a great meeting. I want to thank Jim for driving with me. I want to thank Trevor for getting me in this jam. And I want to thank you for your share. Cool, the birthdays, all the new folks. I love being here, and I love being sober also. And if that's corny to somebody, it's okay with me. You know, I used to be so afraid of what people thought. And I don't feel like that anymore. My sobriety date's January 30th, 1983. And,
We're all
from here. I'm peacefully officer. Let me say that again. My sobriety date's January 30th, 1983. And I am thankful to alcoholics.
Yeah,
I got sober in the prehistoric age. There you go. So I'm delighted to be here, and I have, now how much time? Because I want to get that right.
45 minutes.
I have 45. Okay. They were negotiating during the break. You know what I mean? All right. So I'm going to tell you what I used to be like, what I'm like now, what happened in the middle. And I am delighted to have the opportunity to do that. Because, you know, the book talks about stuff, and one thing it says is I ain't going to remember with sufficient force the remorse, horror, and hopelessness the night before. How am I going to remember it for 42 years? I ain't. And that's why I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I still got alcoholism. It just ain't drunk. And I don't want to be drunk. You know, there was a time I knew I could not stop drinking. That was bad. But when I realized I could die from this, that was the thing. There was a distinction there. This is my third time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was this time that I had that missing ingredient of desperation. I loved what you guys were talking about. I love what you're about. I love that you're in AA. AA is alive and well, and I want it to be so, and I guess you do too. You know, I need it. I need AA. By the time I came here, there was nothing else, and this had to work, and that is why it worked for me. That is why it worked for me. And it continues to work for me because you invite me to do this, or I try to work with new folks like you guys were talking about. And there's a girl I'm talking to now. She could not get more than 5 days for 4.5 years. She kept going out, going out. And another woman and I had the privilege of like doing it an hour at a time with her. You know, that's what we do for each other. She's got 8 days today. It's thrilling. It's thrilling to me, maybe more than. You know, AA works, and I'm grateful to be a part of it. So what I used to be like is basically I hate people. You know, what are they for? And you know, that's just how I felt. Without a program, I couldn't see the purpose. I couldn't see the point. And now, of course, I'll probably cry. I've become a goober. I love people. It's disgusting. It's ruined my reputation. You know, it's just. Hey, I got to come to AA just to live with what you did for me. And I'm coming back to find out how you did it. You know what I mean? Because I am someone completely different, and folks appreciate it. I've never been to your meeting before, but I do not get used to the fact I'm invited back to places. I don't know about you. You know, it's just like, okay, wow, this thing is still working. So I'm a person, basically, I think I was born fed up, you know, and it just got worse. I did not, there's a couple words that mean something to me in AA. One of them is identification. As I look back on my life, what I see was the problem is I did not identify in the places normal people do, I guess. It's not the word they might have used, but it's true. When I came in AA, you talked about not feeling a part of. You talked about it. You know, I felt it. I don't even think I put words to the music. It wasn't music, it was a funeral dirge, but you talked about it. And I was so taken by that. I didn't feel a part of in my family. You know, how do you say that? I didn't know how to say it. I didn't identify with them. And my family were nice looking folks. And I was this tall, skinny thing with buck teeth and scraggly hair. It's a direct quote from a police report. So I ain't embellishing. These guys do like creative writing in the academy, maybe, I don't know. But anyway, I already knew, you know, I already knew. And I grew up in an alcoholic home. That ain't why I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic because I drank my way into this thing, but I saw it. And the other big word that sticks with me in AA is powerlessness. I don't know if there's anybody here who's new, and I don't know, maybe you even got a little time and you don't think you're powerless. I saw my father. My father was the self-professed alcoholic in my family. And I used that word and I looked at my father. And I think, no way. How could my father be powerless? My father was like one of, I would say, maybe 17 people on the planet, as big as he was. How could he be powerless? My dad was 6'7". My dad played All-American college ball in Madison Square Garden. He was this outstanding athlete. He got attention in the newspapers. He had it all going on, you know? And then for a period of time, he became a successful businessman. But he had alcoholism. And here's the problem with that. We get removed. I mean, I don't know what you're doing here, but I got removed. You know, if you drive drunk, you don't even have to be alcoholic, right? But if you drive drunk, you get removed from the car. And if you don't pay the rent, you get removed from the place. And if you don't pay the car payment, you get the car taken away from you. And if you don't show up for the relationship, they file. So it goes, you know. And that's what happened. I got removed. And my father got removed. And I hated that. Because what I have found, I love alcoholic men. I think they're very charismatic. I should know. I have dated many of you and married a few of you. If I married anyone here, I'm sorry. Okay. And so I saw this happen to my father. I saw how my father was different when he drank. He was frightening when he drank. He would miss the driveway, park on the lawn, fall out of the car. And then he'd get into things with my brothers. And it was frightening to me. That person I didn't understand and did not want anything to do with. And so I didn't touch alcohol. I was never going to drink. However, at 17 or 18, I had my first official drink. Here's what was kind of behind that. I want to talk about the spiritual malady I had before I drank, because I had spiritual malady. You know, alcoholism is a family illness. The people who don't drink still get alcoholism. It ain't like this thing COVID that kept us in. It's not contagious like that, but I think it is spiritually contagious, you know, because there were things that occurred in my family because of this ism that we talk about here. And so there was my dad, and then there was me. And I remember going to kindergarten, and there were these things called people, you know, and they were looking at me, you know, like you're looking at me, and they were thinking things without my permission. And my problem in kindergarten is there were like too many of them to kill. You know what I mean? You don't announce this to anyone, but you just quietly. So I wanted out right away. I wanted out. I'm a person who wants out, and you can't get out of kindergarten. And then there's this whole educational plan. I just felt it was over. It was just over, you know, and I became a disenfranchised kid for a few reasons. Excuse me, that was one of them. And sometimes disenfranchised kids join gangs. And so I did. I joined a gang. And I don't know if anybody else did here, but, you know, gangs have colors. And I brought myself into the gang. I did not understand this. It is you that explained to me, isn't it interesting? Everywhere you went, you had a problem. Maybe you had something to do with the problem, you know. And so, no, I didn't know that at the time. But this gang had colors, like some gangs do, and I thought they were ugly, you know, and so I told them, I started to tell them what I thought about certain things, and they started to kind of pay attention to me, because, you know, we have these traditions, but we ain't the only people with customs and rituals, and they were apparently not appreciating where I was coming from, and just so you know how tough I am, this gang is also known as Girl Scouts, okay? Yeah, I knew you'd be blown away. Just knew you'd be blown away. And here's the thing with Girl Scouts. They have these things called Girl Scout cookies, if you're familiar. And I was like cooking the books. I was doing something funny with the cookie money. And I guess they were just waiting for the opportunity, you know, to get rid of me. And so they did. I was uninvited and sharing in a general way to be a Girl Scout. And the book talks about this is the beginning of a fatal progression. Now, that's referring to our drinking. However, it could easily have been applied to the fact that I was uninvited to every organization I became a part of that I can think of anyway, standing here, up to and including my own family, you know? And that's, again, what happens to us. We become the unwelcome hanger-ons. And so it went. And when I was 17 or 18, as I said, I was in a local college watering hole, feeling not a part of, and I got sick of it. Didn't you get sick of it? I wanted out. I wanted a geographic there, and I did not know how to do it. And so I decided, excuse me, to take a drink. And it was no big deal. It was a beer. And I can't tell you if it was the sip of the glass, the first one, or the middle of the glass, bottom of the pitcher, the bottom of the evening. I don't know. But somewhere along the line, the thing the book talks about, the effect produced by alcohol, I believe happened to me. And I would simply describe it like this. This problem that I had all my life of looking at you and your family, looking at you in kindergarten and looking at you at church and all these other places, you looked like you were having a great time. And I had like a funeral going on in my heart or something, you know. And that problem that I had, my first obsession, I guess, because we're obsessive thinkers, it like packed its bag that night and seemed to put its hat on and walk out the back door of my life. And I'm going to tell you something. If you find the answer to a problem as big as that was to me, I'm going to get my hands on that, whatever that is, as often as I can. And so I began to drink as often as I could. I am an alcoholic who takes geographics. I don't know if anybody else is like that. And, you know, suicide's one of my geographics. It is unfortunately the quickest way out of town for a lot of us. But apparently I'm no better at dying than I am at living. So, you know, here I am, possibly annoying you. We don't know. And so I was taking these geographics, and I grew up in Montana, and so I was drinking on the reservations. And the reason I drank on the reservations is the folks on the reservation didn't have my family's number to call about my behavior. I don't know what you're like when you're drinking, but I got some quirks. Let's see. First of all, I'm in a hurry. I think I was born like with Adidas on, and I like men, as I mentioned to you. And so if I like you, I mean, why waste time? Why? I don't need your name. You know, if I'm drinking, I just take my clothes off. There we are. And, unfortunately, my timing gets off sometimes. Like I did that at a wedding reception once, you know, and I was not the entertainment and it was not appreciated. The other thing I will do is if you, the man, do not go along with my program, I get a little irritated and I will chase you with a knife, apparently. Now, you know, I didn't like ever work at Benihana's, you know, Benihana's, and I don't know martial arts or any of that. And it wasn't thousands of men, but it was enough to be a pattern. I'm after you with a knife, man. And I'll tell you something, when I came in AA, I felt so hard done by. I just felt like everybody was against me. You know, and somebody in AA this time, some old timer said to me, you know what, Sia, if your life is somebody else's fault, AA ain't gonna work for you. And I don't know about you, but this time AA had to work for me because I didn't have another idea. And this actually worked in my favor. And if somebody's sitting here thinking, and you can't think of a place to go, that is a gift. It is what we call the badly wrapped gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it forced me to do this thing that saved my life and continues to do that a day at a time. So I'm grateful for that. But anyway, so I was chasing these people with a knife, and what the heck else was I gonna tell you? When I drink, I stay out all night, okay? Oh, I know what I was gonna tell you. I used to feel hard done by, like I was saying that to you, but when I got sober, I started to see things differently, and I hope that'll happen for you if you're new. I started to realize, you know something? Not one of those guys I chased with a knife turned around and said, oh yeah, let's see what you got. Because you know, I would have been screwed. I don't know how to do the thing with the knife. And that didn't happen. And I started to notice other things. Like I'm telling you, I'd stay out all night when I drink because I think I get hope when I drink. And I want to feel that feeling to the end of the line. I'm a spiritually bankrupt person. It feels like a whole new life, you know. And so I stay out all night. My parents had separated this time. I come home in the morning. And one of my brothers took it upon himself to call me out for behaving like that. I don't know about you, but I'll kill you. I'll kill the whole family. You know, you ain't talking to me like that. And so we got in a fist fight, and my mom had to get between us, and my mom had to ask me to leave. And the thing about my mom, here's the other thing. I felt so hard done by, as I said, but after I was sober for a while, here's what I realized. I really thought about this. My mom probably felt like her life was over. You know, I mean, my dad was gone. She had financial problems, kids younger than me in the house. Maybe my mom's heart was broken. You know, that's happened to me. And I didn't wonder about that once. I really thought about it. And I thought, unless I did it in a blackout, I never asked my mom, how you doing, mom? If I cried, my mom, no. So I never, ever considered my mother. And that was shocking to me, because I sure wanted you guys thinking about me, somebody, you know? And so I started to see where I was a problem. I started to see what we call my part, you know? And I found that very threatening. I found it threatening that you talked about me being self-centered. Because I thought, of course I'm self-centered. I'm trying to save my life here. But I started to see the other side of this thing. And then I'm grateful to you for that, because maybe I would have never known. Anyway, so now my mom had to ask me to leave. I'm the unwelcome hanger-on in my family, you know, like the book says. And I'm now I'm drinking in Beverly Hills. Here's the thing about this, though. There's this little line in the book. It's called Whistling in the Dark. I don't know if you guys remember that. And I don't know what that means to you, but here's what it means to me. Things were not always going the way I wanted them to go when I drank. The night wasn't always turning out in my favor. I got myself in compromising situations. I wasn't betting the people I was going out into the night with. And so I got in some bad situations. I'm an alcoholic woman. I mean, I ain't special that way, but things happened that I really didn't want to think about in the light of day. And sorry, I don't know what's going on with my throat. You're choking me up, you guys. What the heck? And so, pardon me. Things didn't go my way. So I started kind of dressing things up, you know, to myself. And yes, the truth was I was drinking in Beverly Hills. But the whole truth, the thing I was leaving out, is that I was drinking at the bus stop in Beverly Hills. It's just a little bit different picture, you know, a little bit different. And I ended up drinking at this place way downtown in Los Angeles called The Good Night, which it wasn't. So if you decide to leave AA, I wouldn't look it up. I don't recommend it. It was a rough bar. And sometimes when young women drink in rough bars, stuff happens. And what happened in this bar one night, there was another young woman who drank there. I was not friends with her. I don't make friends with women when I'm drinking, because men are human-sized credit cards. And I don't like the competition, you know? And this other young woman ended up with her head blown off in the vacant lot behind the building this bar was located in. I do not know what kind of violence was in your drinking. That was not typical of mine. And it frightened me. It frightened me because I was a lot like Debbie. That was her name. Because when I drink in a bar setting, I start getting obnoxious. I get between you and your drink, or you and your conversation, or you and the meal you're eating, or the show you're watching. You know, I create tension, fights break out. And so I realized, you know what? This could be me. And this is when I started to try to control my drinking. I don't know when you did that. This is when I said to myself, you know what? Maybe you should back off of it a little. Why don't you chill? Maybe you have had more than your fair share. But I did the same thing with me that I did with you, if you had something to say about my drink. I just started drinking behind my own back now, instead of yours, you know. And it is a funny thing to say, I guess, because I hear. But here's the thing about that. You know, I've lived a long time sober, and I was out there for a while drinking. Of all the things that have happened to me, I will stake my life on this. Of everything that ever happened to me or ever will, there is nothing worse than when a person like me, I don't know about you, is not able to stop drinking when I want to. You know why? Because the right to choose, free will, is what separates man from animal. And I no longer had that. I felt like an animal. I lived like an animal. I hated my guts. We call that the bondage of self in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was there. And a couple of things propelled me into AA. First of all, if you go home, I bet you'd notice if your place was tossed. I had been burglarized, but like I didn't notice for a couple of weeks. Come on, you know, who lives like that? You know, I couldn't stand myself. And the other thing that happened, I was looking out of the window of the place where I was living at the time, and I saw this guy walking down the sidewalk there with a shotgun. I'm from Montana, I know a shotgun when I see one. And I would say to you, maybe I was lucky in retrospect, or maybe, I don't know, but I saw this fella. And when he crossed the street, came into the courtyard at my building and up the stairs, to my door. I knew it was the guy with the shotgun. I didn't really know what to do. I stood on my side of the door and my mind was racing. You know, Bill Wilson talks about that in his story, because I was thinking, I don't recognize that guy. What is he doing at my door? Did I do something to him in a blackout? Is that what he's doing there? Is it the people I live with? Because I lived with those kind of people. And they would have been fair to say the same thing about me. I had no idea. All I knew to do was be real quiet on my side of the door. And I don't know how long this guy was there. It felt like 1,000 years. He was there, and then this weird thing. I heard footsteps going back down the stairs, and the guy walked out of my life. I don't know if there was commotion in the courtyard. Maybe his mom called him for dinner. I don't know. But dang, that was a moment when I really wanted help. And you know what that moment reminds me of? It reminds me of another moment that began to happen with, I guess I could say, sickening regularity, where I would come to or wake up, I don't know how you characterize it, and I started saying to myself, I ain't doing this anymore. It's going to be different. I'm not going with those. This is going to turn around. And I would say that to myself again and again and again. And it was never different. Never. Never. And you know, I'd want to bash my head against the wall or get run over by a car or something, because there is no off button for obsession of the mind. Maybe you found one. I did not. And so this is when I really wanted help. I don't know when that happened for you. But here is the problem with me. I am not a helpable person. It's just the way I seem to be built. I don't know. I read something in The Family Afterward, I believe in the big book, where Bill says children from alcoholic homes are pathetically cynical. Maybe that's true. But here's the deal. There were people who tried to help me before I came to AA. I don't know if that happened for you. You know, there were the folks like with a little clerical collar, and they would try to help me see life through a more spiritual lens. Then there's the folks with the diplomas on the wall, and they're going to help you with your feelings and your emotions and your thinking. And then there's the ones with the gun and the badge. Okay, I know what you're doing here. Let's go. But you know what I knew about every single one of those people underneath all that jazz? They were just another lousy human being, you know, just like me. You know, screw you. You can't really help somebody like that. And so that's who I was. But here's the weird thing about Alcoholics Anonymous for me. I wish it for you. I mean, I ain't here to promote AA. You know, we got a tradition, we don't promote it. But what I'm telling you is nothing else worked. And I don't think anything else would have. Here's the thing about you. I got no defense against the first drink. If that is knowing to my innermost self I'm alcoholic, I know that. But I got no defense against Alcoholics Anonymous either. I don't. Because, you know, I felt patronized by those professionals, threatened by them. And I don't get that from you. When I came in here, you said to me, Sia, we're on an even playing field here. You ain't a charity case here. We're all looking for the same 24 hours. That's what we're doing. There's folks here who have more time. They have experience. They might be able to help you with stuff you don't know how to do. That's what you said to me. And that got to me in a way I had no defense against you. None. None. Astonishing. Wonderful. I am grateful for that. So I was sitting someplace at this time waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit, because that's what ran my life. And I want to talk about this for a minute, because I told you this is my third time in AA. I underestimated alcoholism is what I did. And here's how I did it. I confused alcoholism with overall addiction. And I know it's an umbrella in the professional community, but in AA, we have this singleness of purpose thing. It ain't to exclude anybody. You know, there's a lot of us that are addicts also, but here's the thing that I missed, and I'm going to pass it on for what it's worth. Addiction is normal. If there's an addictive substance and I use it or you use it or my grandma uses it or maybe the dog uses it, we're going to get addicted. Alcoholism is abnormal. And the reason I say that is because of this guy in the big book, Dr. Silver. That's why he's in the big book. It ain't because two alcoholics were talking to each other in 1935. No disrespect to Bill or Bob. This guy, Dr. Silkworth, did this like little case study, if you want to say that, of about 40,000 of us. We were dying around him, and he's checking us out, and he's trying to figure out what's going on here. And he goes, this is an allergy. Okay, so an allergy is where like fewer than 10% of people who drink become alcoholic. That's what it is. And then the weird thing about this allergy is that feature obsession of the mind. Now, I got other allergies. Like, I got an allergy to penicillin. You know what? I'll stake my life on this. I ain't scoring a shot of penicillin again in this lifetime. That will never happen unless somebody makes a mistake in a medical community someplace. But I also will absolutely stake my life on the fact I will drink again if I ain't in AA because of the obsession of the mind. And here's something I want to ask you. Think about another allergy. How about people are allergic to peanuts, the peanaholic? Okay. So like somebody who's allergic to peanuts, like they eat a peanut, their throat swells up, they die. So I'm going to ask you, you think a person like that is going to pursue a peanut into the gates of insanity and death? That ain't happening. How come we will drink until we die? How come? The second feature of alcoholism, obsession of the mind. And so I'm waiting for the obsession of the mind to hit. And I read something about AA in the newspaper. It was in the community service section of the newspaper, I guess. And it said something like this, that we hold hands here, we pray, and we don't drink anymore. You know, the first thought I had is that's corny as hell. You know, I tried to bat it away. But then I heard this other voice, and I've heard a couple other people, at least in AA, say this happened to them too. And it was a quiet voice, it was a measured voice, and it simply said, I want to go. And that voice got the swing vote. And so I went to this first meeting, and it was a nice meeting. It was a daytime meeting. It was well run, you know, like this one. People knew what they were doing. They were there to help the person coming in the door. There was a woman who greeted me. She gave me her phone number. She said she'd sponsor me. They put me in the front of the meeting because I was new, all that stuff, you know. And the meeting starts, and just like in kindergarten, I get this attack of self-centered fear, and I want to get the hell out of there. But I'm too embarrassed to get up and leave because I'm in front. Just, you know, so I just shut down. I heard nothing in that meeting. I came for help. And at the end of the meeting, I ain't got your dang book. I don't know those steps or traditions. I ain't calling that lady, you know, eat dirt. And I go home. That's what I do. I go home. And this is my story. So this is my take on it. I don't know exactly what happened. But after a couple hours, here's what I noticed. That same. I don't know about you. That I cannot pay away, pray away, hide from, outwit, outweigh, negotiate with obsession of the mind, that thing was gone. The only time that went anyplace is if I had a drink. Did I have a drink? You know, I had to like check myself. No, I was astonished by this. But I'm gonna tell you something. I would never believe that Trevor did it, or Cole did it, or Greg did it, no alcohol. You would never have convinced me some individual was responsible for that. But something happened in that meeting. I had to admit that to myself. And I'm gonna tell you something. I thought you were waving that at me. I'm gonna tell you something. That moment is the dividing line of my life before and after. I even drank again, but I could never forget that moment where this thing was gone. There it is. But here's the problem with me after that meeting. I came to AA thinking I had a drinking problem. And if you do, AA is going to work great. But I got this other thing, it turns out, called alcoholism. And it ain't a synonym. And it isn't a euphemism. It's a thing, you know? And I got it. And I didn't know that. And what I found out is that to me now, it's like an iceberg alcoholism. And the tip of the iceberg is the symptom of drinking. But the whole underbelly of the iceberg is spiritual malady. That is what sunk the Titanic. And that is what sunk me, because I didn't know about that. And I thought, man, my problem is over. I was grateful to AA. And I thought, if something comes up, you know, I'll be right back. And it's like alcoholism heard me and was happy to oblige. I had this, what we sometimes call in AA still, the pink cloud experience. I was ecstatic to have that obsession lifted. I was leaping out of bed. I had dreams. I had hopes. I could accomplish them. And this went on for a couple of weeks. But I was living on self-reliance. And that's a normal thing out there. But we are not like normal people. And so it says in the book, self-reliance failed us. That's a pretty creepy thing to say. And it came true for me. I went someplace where I saw somebody I always had a bad time with. Now, look, I don't know about you, but if I don't have enough spiritual program, I become like a resentment machine, you know, a problem factory. And I went to see this person and I got mad at him like I always did. And then I blew my sobriety. Then I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. because I wanted to find out, you know, what do you stand in? What line for the cup of coffee where you get the surcease and deep session? I had no idea what to do about that, how to summon that. And I had no defense against my alcoholism. I got swept out the door. And I was gone for 11 years, and it got worse. It got a lot worse. I ended up in England, and I was modeling. That's what I called it. I don't know what you'd have called it if you'd seen me in action, but that's what was going on. And I'm in the ICANN club. I still am. I'm just sober, but I was in the ICANN club, you know? And the ICANN club is like, I can't, as I said, I can't show up. I can't pay the tab for a regular life. And so I was this terrible employee. I came for this shooting, and I'd been out all night. A shoot. And I'd been out all night and all this. And so I guess they were optimists, and they went ahead and put all the stuff on you. They took the pictures. I saw these pictures. I looked terrible. They were so mad. It was for this oil of Olay. You know what? I did not look like a vision for you. I looked like an alcoholic. My face was bloated. My eyes were bloodshot. You know, they were furious, and they called the agency. And it wasn't the first time I had a bad day. I had walked out of my shoes on runways and put dresses on backwards. And so, you know, that was it. They just told me, get out, just get out. And this is when the Bank of England called, and I was kind of overdrawn at the bank. Did that happen to you? It's like, I thought I had a lot of money, and I suddenly owed them money. It's where the book talks about you can't separate the true from the false. That is so terrifying. It cannot happen to me. It did. And I didn't know what to do. And there's this thing in the book, it says, God's everything or God's nothing. And you know, when an alcoholic like me, God is everything is when there's nobody else to call. And there had been a woman in that business who'd seen me in action, and she was a member of AA. And she gave me her phone number. She said she'd take me to a meeting. That was the day I called that woman. And I went back to AA. But I had certain things. You know, there's that thing in the book also, there's a difference between a demand and a request. And I had certain demands. I had certain expectations of you if I would give you the privilege of my sobriety, apparently, you know. And so there I was, and I had certain things, and those things did not come to pass. There's another thing the book says, there's one who has all power. May you find him now. And that day, his name was Gerald. And the reason it was Gerald. Yeah, I guess you pulled that one too. Gerald was going to take me on a geographic. He was buying tickets to take us out of the country. That's the way I operate. I'm out of here, you know. And so we went to Gatwick Airport. We're at the ticket counter, and the federales come swooping down, and they arrest Gerald. What was more upsetting to me is they arrested the tickets. And so it's that part in the book, you know, about take a trip, not take a trip. And I did not have program for not take a trip. And so I did what I always do when I am me against my alcoholism. I blew my sobriety again. Then I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was mad. I don't know if you've ever been in a meeting, but just mad, you know. I thought, what am I doing here with these losers? And I was sick and tired of you telling me what the score is or quoting the book to me. You know, I'll kill you. I'll just, you know, I get like that. So I was sitting there, and I was trying to figure it out. And here's where I got to. Here's what I realized. I don't know what meeting it was. I don't know what person said it. I don't even know what they said. But this thing, identification, somewhere along the line, I crossed that invisible line. And I became a part of here. I was in trouble. Alcoholics Anonymous had become my home. I did not identify in the places that people find comfort, regular people. I identified in AA behind my own back, just like I drank. I was in trouble that day, and I came home. And when I realized that, I was staggered by that, you know. And it opened me up a little bit. So at the end of the meeting, I went up to this person who I'd never seen before, and I told them a little more of the truth about me than I normally would. And they listened politely, like we do, those of us who have a little time. You listened, and then they wrote a phone number down, and they said to me, you know, Sia, if you got 6 months of your life to give, why don't you work this program as Bill sees it and not as Sia sees it? He wasn't being a wise guy. He just said it straight up. And then he walked away. And so now I'm standing at that turning point we read about, you know, how it works. I'm going to ask God's protection and care with complete abandon. Or the unsaid thing is, I ain't. And, you know, I've stood with a lot of people now in these years of sobriety because I owe you and I want to pay it back. And I say to them, look, I'll be glad to help you out. Here's my number. And sometimes they say that they can't call me. And you know what I know? Because I've been here and I've learned about honesty. That's the wrong verb. The real verb is you won't. Because I can dial a phone. You know what I mean? And I can get in my car and come here. I can do that. And that's a life or death decision for a lot of us, unfortunately. Thank you. Yeah. And so there I was, you know, and I had this phone number and I was desperate. And that, again, as I told you, was a missing ingredient. And so I called this person and they were an alcoholic. They knew what they were talking about. And they started talking to me. And I want to tell you also that I'm a recovering know-it-all. I don't know if there's any know-it-alls here. You know, because I batted the program out of my way, like allergy of the body, obsession of the mind. I thought, I know all about that. When I drink, I get an allergy for my boyfriend and an obsession for yours. You know, give them all the same. Yeah, yeah. And so I'm listening to this person and they know what they're talking about, but I heard it before. You know what I mean? It's that cynicism of familiarity. Familiarity breeds contempt. And so they're telling me stuff and my heart starts sinking. I thought I'd hear something that would give me hope or something, and I wasn't hearing it. And at the end of this conversation, they said this. They said, if you want to clean up your act, Sia, maybe we can help you. You know what that is? If you're new, what we call that in AA is the flimsy read. I wasn't expecting that. It caught me off guard. And you know what it gave me? It gave me a little hope. And I didn't know I wanted it, but I wanted it, you know? And so I just like got on a plane and I came to Los Angeles and I got sober in the Pacific with one alcoholic yelling at another, you know? Yeah, man, I owe him. I love him to death. But I'll close with just this, going to the home group for the first time. You know, they were very nice to me. And I see you guys being supportive of each other. Folks gave me rides. They put me up with somebody because I didn't have any money. I had no folding money when I got sober. And I go to this home group and this guy who gave me a ride, I walk in there and there were like people, too many people. Looked like everybody ever born was in there sober, you know? And this guy looked at me and he could tell I was like having a psychotic episode. And he said, well, you know, you're here, you might as well stay till the end of the meeting. And I thought, easy for you to say, dirtbag, you got the car keys, you know? And so I didn't really have a choice. And I went in and I sat down in the meeting and I heard nothing, just like in kindergarten, just like in the first AA meeting. And at the end of this meeting, I get up and I'm heading for the exit. I would love to ask that person that I was that night, where are you going now, Sia? You know what my resume looked like that third time me coming in AA? By then, I had been uninvited to one entire country. Thank you very much. And I was living illegally in another country. And I happened to have this little problem. It was a secret. We usually have one. I was married to two people at the same time. And I tried to like treat it like an accounting problem, but you know, the parties involved didn't go for it. It's like, what do you mean you lost count? It ain't a high number, 1, 2, you know? And so I had nowhere to go, nowhere to go. And so I'm heading out and this guy cuts me off and he goes, how would you like a coffee commitment? And I felt like saying to this guy, how would you like me to kick your ass? You know, I was just so scared. But I did not say that. I'm also a chicken. I came up with something else. I said, well, I'm only going to be here 2 weeks, so I can't take the commitment. He said, no, take it for 2 weeks. And I didn't have an answer fast enough. You know? And I felt like I'd signed some kind of contract with the mafia. I felt so screwed. But here's what happened, I think, in that moment. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't leave. I just couldn't go out there one more time. And I have struggled with the spiritual terminology. A couple of you, I believe it was you, Trevor, talked about difficulty coming to terms with this God idea. You know, AA gave us the dignity to choose whatever it is. It can be a fire hydrant, I was told. It doesn't matter. It just can't be me. I so appreciated you giving me that dignity. And what I think happened in this transaction, in this moment, is that it reminds me of when I'm an excellent swimmer. And what this experience that I'm going to speak of briefly reminds me of is one time when I underestimated the situation and I was drowning, you know, and I had underestimated alcoholism too. And when I was drowning, you know, the body doesn't like take a group conscience to see if it wants to live. It fights, it wants to live, you know, it fights, fights, it fights, it fights. Finally, there's nothing left. And there was nothing left. And I was going to drift down wherever I was going to end up. And suddenly, out of nowhere, there was something to stand on. And I could get my head out of water. I could get some air. I lived, you know. And it is the $100 word in AA, the thing that eluded me my first two times. And that word is surrender. And I don't even think I did surrender. I think I was surrender. And I heard a few of you when you're up here taking birthdays, you know, there's a baseline here. As low as you can go, we will meet you there if you want to stop drinking. That's the only requirement for membership. Do you want to stop? You may not know how to stop. I didn't know how to stop. Then you find out you're going to, we'll take you. We'll take you. You know, AA gets it. And so in that moment, I had that experience. And it was shocking to me. And I have never been the same since that moment either. There have been many of those moments. And so I started doing this thing. You know, I had a sponsor. I thought he'd kill me. And so that was good because I respected him. I guess you call that respect. And I began to do the things that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I only have a couple of minutes. So I want to tell you something, I guess. I don't know what I could tell you. I'll tell you, I hated my parents. So I'm going to tell you what happened with my mom. My mom was what we call an untreated Al-Anon. I could take my dad, okay? But my mom had a nervous breakdown, and I was never going to forgive her, you know, for how she was. And you told me that's called resentment, and it's the number one offender, Sia. That's a pretty high number, so maybe rethink that. And I wanted to stay here, so I started doing what you said, take contrary action. Do little things for your mom. You can call us before you kill her, you know, but do that. And so I built a little collateral of decent interaction with my mother, and this day came, I don't know why, where my mom, I guess I didn't have a big chip on my shoulder, she told me something she never told me before. She told me she'd gone somewhere as a little girl and she'd been assaulted. And she tried to tell her mom about it, but her mom didn't go for it, couldn't believe it. And I don't know how many times this happened to my mom, but once she told me this, she like fell down. She literally fell down and she was at my feet, you know, prostrate. And I was looking at my mom, and here's the thing. I came in AA and something like that happened to me too. Happens to a lot of us. And I was never going to tell anybody about that till the day I died. And you said to me, you know what, Sia, you'll stay as sick as the secrets you choose to keep. That's called selfishness, and that's pride. And I wanted to stay here. So I had divested myself of that secret. And as I was looking at my mom, here's what I realized. I had been healed because you said to me, you can hold on to that, Sia. You pitch a tent over something you hate. Do you get how alcoholism sabotages you there? And so I gave it to you because I totally wanted to. And my mom had no Alcoholics Anonymous. And my heart broke open for my mom. And you know what that is? That's a moment of compassion. And this great member of AA, Cubby Selby, talked about this. He said, where an ancient hatred is turned into a current love, you know, that is compassion. And my heart broke open. And I have an open heart. I am here with you. I don't know you, but I love you because we have this thing in common. We want to live. And we're here and we're working this program. And I thank you guys for 12-step help.